That service right. Fabric shipping.
We are live, and we're live. So
shut up, man. Just shut up.
We're actually recording online, but
right, we're recording right now.
Here we are. All right,
we are
live, boys and girls. Welcome to the second episode of Cloud Server Tools. I'm your host, Scott Klein, and with me today is Brady Gaster,
hey.
Scott Hunter, and Corey Sanders.
Hello.
Like my radio voice?
That was a nice radio voice. All right, so as we discussed last week, we will be following a certain format. So the first 10 minutes, announcements, next 10 minutes, Q&A. And from our last show, we decided to talk, our Q&A would be open source based. So that's going to be a good topic. And we actually had some good conversation last week about open source. And then we'll take the last few minutes, we'll take Q&A from the listening audience. Okay? So.
Excellent.
Yeah, good plan. So let's begin with some announcements. What do we got, gentlemen?
I got one.
All right. Brady's got an announcement.
.NET Framework 4.6 is officially supported in Azure App Service as of last week. So we announced it on the blog post. It was kind of ironic. We wrote a blog post to let everybody know what that basically we were doing our best to get .NET Framework 4.6 supported across the entire stack.
Yep.
Because our primary complainers were our customers, the ASP.NET guys, who were writing all their ASP.NET apps in VS 2015 and were super stoked at the framework. And then they were all sad trombone when they couldn't publish. So we fixed that problem. Literally like 20 minutes after we published the blog. So we had to do an update the next day. I have seen from a couple of customers a couple of questions about very specific .NET Framework 4.6 bugs that they knew about from watching the release notes. I can't go piecemeal through each one of those bugs and tell you yes or no they are resolved in the framework.
Okay.
I'm not that guy. No.
The JIT bugs were patched on Patch Tuesday.
Okay. So there's that.
And that'll go out...
That was last Tuesday.
Last Tuesday.
Yes.
Okay.
So if you're wondering why you cannot publish your .NET, your ASP.NET 4.6 applications to Azure App Service, wonder no more. I have one running myself right here.
Speaking of 4.6, I have a question for Corey. And this is not throwing him under the bus or anything.
Wow.
This is going to be good.
You have a .NET question for me?
I do.
Oh, I'm sorry.
He's the IaaS guy. I'm not quite sure.
I'm really uncomfortable.
So we were... One of the features that we have is we have HTTP2 support in .NET 4.6. Mm-hmm. And so if you're running an ASP.NET application, what this means is, by default, we'll multiplex multiple connections across a single connection.
Hmm.
So instead of opening
That's
up
cool.
multiple sockets to the server,
yeah.
we'll open up one and maybe four or five requests will actually come through that stream.
Yeah.
The question for you is, do we have Windows Server 2016 previews that I can run in IaaS today?
Yeah, we do. We have a. Let me pull it up here. We do have an image in the marketplace. Let's see here.
I thought you did.
Yeah, I gotta pull it up here. It's you know keeping it up to date with the latest.
I think there's not another one coming out till November. I think the last one is from like the summer.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so I'll pull it up here. But yeah, I believe we do have that latest image.
And then the second question was, I assume Azure would not get in the way of HTTP2.
Yeah, it should
and
not.
So it should. So I would assume that would just flow right through into that as well. So
yeah,
if,
yeah.
if I am a customer,
it's 480, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if I'm a customer that wants to use HTTP2 in Azure today, what I would do is I would go to the VM gallery or whatever you call it,
virtual machine gallery,
marketplace, find the Windows Server 2016 preview images, install one of those into your IaaS VM. And then from there, you can actually deploy your ASP.NET application there and take advantage of the features of HTTP2.
Okay. That's kind of cool. So I guess my confusion is why... What does your role, what does Corey's
he
role have to...
He just wants an image to be able to deploy...
Okay.
These are
version of
it's a preview OS, which means we're not going to make it available in Azure websites and all these things that are running GA product.
Right.
And so the question, you know... IaaS is the place to go if you want to go run something that's not been blessed yet or not
place to
sure. It's so your dev environment.
Because you own the machine completely. You can put whatever on the machine you want, and you know as Corey was saying, there's a gallery, and you should be able to search. I would hope for Server 2016, and
yeah, it doesn't come up right now, so I may have to follow up on that one, Scott.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure we had one earlier this year, but let me.
I'm pretty sure you did too.
Yeah, but let me follow up on that because 2016 does not show in my search, so that may be. That's going to be a follow-up.
If it's not, we'll follow up next week and answer this and find out how to do this.
Yeah. Well, I'll actually make
you're going to take a note.
I'm going to take a note of this so we can actually follow up in a couple of weeks.
Got it. Because we have no way to go back and rewatch this.
Oh, gee.
We definitely need to get the notes.
We do have to get the notes.
Yeah. I think that's a zing.
That was it?
Was that a zing?
What is a zing?
So it's... no, actually, I'm doing both. I'm noting.
Let me bang that.
I'm actually noting the time of when you said that, so I can go watch the video to figure out the question. Okay. All right,
Maya, are you obsessive today or what?
Wow, this shirt. Show is good so far.
That's a great shirt.
Yeah, love the shirt.
It's cool.
Yeah, thank you.
You have any announcements, Corey?
You got any announcements?
You know, I don't have any big announcements. I think the one thing I will say, there was a blog post that went live yesterday that Mark Rasinovich wrote, focusing on containers.
Okay.
So this was, again, not really like a big announcement per se, but a really great overview on sort of, you know, what containers are, sort of how they work. You know, how Docker sits on top of them, you know, the sort of the dev test production story for Docker, and some of the plans that we've already announced, you know, for Windows Server containers and Hyper-V containers, and sort of how they actually play out. And then it also talks a little bit about microservices and some of the future plans around Service Fabric to be able to deliver on that. So it's a great actually blog post. Again, not really an announcement, but I would recommend folks to go take a little look.
Okay.
Back to the previous question.
Oh,
if you want to find the Windows Server 2016 preview,
Do you search for preview?
You have to search for, well, it's under Windows Server Technical Preview 2.
There it is. Yeah, there it is.
That's a mouthful.
No wonder.
It is.
But that is how you would find it.
There it
if
is.
You, yeah. If you want to find the preview of Windows Server 2016, you can try in the IaaS images, so you can try things like HTTP2.
Windows Server 2016.
Windows Server Technical Preview 2.
So if you just search for preview, you'll actually come up with it.
And it hints that there's a new one coming because it says it will expire October 1st of 2015.
Let's hopefully a new one comes before.
I would hope so.
Yeah, I was pretty sure we had one.
Is that so? There's search, MSDN, right? To search on MSDN, they can find that.
No. We're in the Azure portal.
Oh, Azure portal.
You go to the marketplace.
Oh,
in
I see
your portal.
Yes,
you do a search.
Portal.azure.com. Yeah. Okay. Very good.
/en-us.
For the exact URL.
For the perfect URL, yeah. So, yeah, go to Marketplace and search for Tech Movie. Nice find, Scott.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm glad you're here this week. Last week, I was glad you weren't here. But this week...
I need to listen to last week's show and hear how I was thrown under the bus.
Well, you thought... I don't think...
No, I think we were very nice to Mr. Hunter. All right, so any other announcements?
One more announcement.
I have one, but go ahead.
Here, it's hilarious, actually.
So this is something we did just about a month ago, but we haven't had a show to talk about this since then, is we've been shipping these. We've talked on the show a couple times about ASP.NET 5. That's the cross-platform version of ASP.NET 5. And we finally published a schedule. So you can now go to github.com/ASP.NET/home/wiki/roadmap. We'll have to put that URL up somewhere. And from that, you can see our schedule. And basically, to roll it off, right as we had shipped VS 2015 RTM, the week after that, we shipped a beta 6. We have a beta 7 coming out at the end of this month. That beta will be the first time that we move away from mono as for our cross-platform runtime to the core CLR written by Microsoft.
Okay.
So we've got networking and all the stuff required there in Core CLR for us to be able to move to that at the end of the month. We have a beta 8 coming out mid-September. And then in November, sometime in November, we're going to do a go live RC fully supported.
Cool. I love
and
that.
And that'll be on. And so for customers, that really just kind of says, you know, that's the time frame that you can start moving workloads to this and moving workloads to Dockerized containers on Linux and whatever you want to do.
Okay.
So.
Cool. All right, let's wrap up these announcements. I have one, and it's quite along the same lines as we didn't. We probably should have announced it on our last show, but we'll announce it this show. So there's two products. So SQL Server 2016 CTP 2.2 was released in late July, and along with that, there's the SQL Server 2016 Upgrade Advisor Preview for CTP 2.2. So these are kind of both significant, right? If you're familiar with SQL Server 2016, introduces quite a few new features for their, I think, kind of. Sean Bice has said for quite a long time that this is probably the most significant release of SQL Server ever.
Wow.
Right? for things like the operational analytics, StretchDB, so some hybrid scenarios.
Super cool.
StretchDB and this upgrade advisor actually will take a look at your database and go, hey, we recommend, it'll actually do recommendations on how to use StretchDB, which tables to use StretchDB on, things like that. So there's, if you haven't downloaded or taken a look at SQL Server 2016, highly recommend you do that. You can get that off of, you know, just Google or Bing. Bing.
The CTP, this is not, this is this the release or this is the CTP?
CTP 2.2.
We also have that in our marketplace.
I just looked it up as well. I was just going to say, if you just search for SQL Server 2016, it will show up in the marketplace. If
perfect.
CTP 2.
Great awesome. Way to evaluate it and try it. Don't, you know, burn hardware locally. Just go to, you know, create a VM in the cloud and try it out.
VMs are awesome. I think it's a great way to, like you say, try these technologies, and especially take a look at that upgrade advisor on some of your test databases, or because it says, hey, how do we use some of these technologies like StretchDB and operational analytics and some of these, you know, always encrypted is going to be a good one, especially from the developer standpoint. I mean, when we get to the Q&A, I actually have a question around the always encrypted from a developer standpoint. So, so this is, I think, a good CTP3 should be coming shortly. I won't give a time frame, but there'll be lighting up a lot of new UI for some of these features.
That's cool.
Which will be very good. All right, any other announcements before we jump into the Q&A section of our show? Perfect. Well, let's get to the Q&A. Brady, you got a couple?
Yes, I did. I actually have one. Hang on a second. I've got one that I got from actually a Discus thread the other day. A gentleman was asking, I'm going to paraphrase the context in the conversation.
Because they had a lot of curses in it and stuff.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. I was like, you can suck. Actually, I think it might have even been from an intro. No, it wasn't really complaining. And I was discussing this with Scott on our walk over this morning. And I was discussing this question that I received through Discuss, which was a disgusting conversation, yes, as Scott points out, as are most conversations with Hunter. Guy basically said, oh yeah, thanks for introducing me to Tumblr, by the way, again. By the way, he says, this guy basically asked a question. He said, I've sort of had a problem finding certain things throughout Azure in the portal. And you guys talk about this thing called app service in your documentation. But if I go into the actual portal, like I see web apps and mobile apps and all the stuff that's like a part of Azure app service.
Yep.
And he sort of basically just said, why'd you change the name? So I'm just going to read what I wrote on the Discus. I wrote, Azure Websites was a precursor technology and a dependency of mobile services, web jobs, and then obviously later API and logic apps. The thing that we started as just for websites, in quotes, so I did air quotes there, and Corey's laughing at me again. That happens regularly. That grew to support enterprise web application class eventually became the thing atop which mobile services was built. That trend continued as mobile services evolved later into mobile apps, and then later we added logic apps and API apps to serve those other needs. All these things are indeed built on the same technology websites started, but as the list of different ways people were using websites kind of grew and grew, we realized that calling it websites was sort of selling it short. Since it's not just for websites, it's also for web applications, for mobile apps, logic apps, API apps, and all that good stuff. It's really more of a service that enables application developers to build their backend stuff and publish it up, hence the name app service. So I think that we're in the beginning of calling it that now. We've just sort of made the mental switch to calling it that. My team is the Azure Tools team on the ASP.NET team. Mm-hmm. We're kind of affectionately calling ourselves the app service tooling team as of the last couple months. It's sort of been an interesting change. You'll see the term grow. One thing that I thought was interesting was when I threw this out to Hunter, he actually talked about how since we've changed it to app service, we've actually seen an uptick in, what's a good way to put it, adoption. We've actually seen a pretty significant uptick in terms of adoption. I don't know what the percentages are. I think you threw out percentages.
So
they were good.
Well, I think your question was why inside the portal did we not have the term app service?
Yeah, but what the guy was really asking is like, why did you? Is it just a branding thing? Like why did you change the name?
So it was a couple of things. One was it was a simplification of pricing.
Right.
So before we had three products that were all priced independently, and if you went and you might use them all together.
Yep.
And so it made your price matrix complicated. And so the idea was to basically put an umbrella of these technologies. Hey, if you're building APIs, logic, yep. web, put them all under one price umbrella, mobile, one price umbrella. So it's one simple price. That was part of it.
Yep.
And then, you know, everybody building apps today is building those all that whole suite of things today. And so it kind of makes our marketing message for Azure easier to say, hey, here's this umbrella technology that lets you build, you know, your mobile part, your web part, your API part,
yep.
and
yep.
your integration part all together.
Yeah. Okay.
That makes sense.
You know, they're starting to do that. It's a common theme now, right? Because they did the same thing with a lot of the big data IoT services, right? They created the Cortana Analytics, right? Which it simply says we're going to take some of these, you know, machine learning, HD Insight, some of these stream, and just put them under an umbrella and make them easier to use, and also from a pricing structure. Right, so I can see them starting a thread to really make it easier to use and understand how to use these features in the cloud, things like that. Right?
Yeah, I think that's why, you know, as Brady said, we did see an uptick in business, and I think the uptick probably was the simplification of pricing.
Yep. Okay. Yeah, good one.
And just in general, I think, you know, when you're trying to build these applications and solutions, being handed a bunch of Legos and being expected to go kind of put it together yourself can be difficult.
Yes.
And
yes. So which service do I need for this? Which service do I need for that? Right.
I think by offering that, by offering sort of that sort of clear demarcation of these things belong together, right? Like you actually will start to, I think, seeing sort of the natural progression of people's apps being developed in such a way that they will actually take advantage of the capabilities we have. Frequently, I think one of the biggest complaints that we do find about Azure in general is they didn't realize we had something we didn't
yes.
have.
yes, we do. Yes,
what's amazing?
Well, even this morning, we couldn't find Server 2016. So
well, I was going to say that the reality is there is so much stuff in Azure that it's actually amazing what all's there. And
yes.
And some of it, you know, I'll throw an example of something that I know of is if you want to go find API management to manage APIs, it's in the weirdest place. You'd have to go to the portal and or go to azure.com and look under web and mobile.
Yep.
I'm not sure web and mobile is where I would look
with
for that.
Yeah.
But that's a problem as well, is a lot of times people don't see stuff because, for example, if you want to cache, it's under data.
Maybe you're not
thinking of data when you think of cache.
Right. And that surprised me too. Why would I put cache under, you know, question that one as well.
As Corey said this morning, if we're looking for Windows Server 2016, you look for server technical preview.
Yeah.
I wouldn't look there for that.
That's,
so.
That's right. Something I should go fix. So that's definitely something I'll take on.
Good.
So.
All right. Thank you, Brady.
I don't think they solidified the naming for it, which is, I think, why it's called that.
It didn't have the year probably when we originally published
it. Yeah, I think that's it. So.
Yeah.
All right, Hunter.
Question.
Q&A, sir. You said you had one for me? Did you say that?
That was earlier.
That
was
earlier. That.
Mine was the Windows 2000.
You want him to ask you another question?
No,
is that what you're asking?
The problem.
We solved it together. We
work as a team.
One Microsoft. We collaborated.
We collaborated. that's right.
So a question to me was
yeah, but yet he keeps showing up week after week.
So a question for me is, hey, I'm looking at web technologies, and I hear that Node.js is faster than ASP.NET. So should I move to Node.js for my web workload?
Yeah, I've heard that too.
So I thought I would answer this in a cool way. So our team hears this quite a bit.
Good.
There's a benchmark called the Tech Empower benchmark that's out there, and this is where a bunch of web technologies are benchmarked together. This is Java, Node, Ruby, Python, PHP, us. We're not in every benchmark because they're running most of their benchmarks on Linux machines in AWS today.
Yep.
And yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Occasionally, every two or three benchmarks, they'll do a round on top of a Windows machine over there as well.
Yeah.
Now, of course, today, since my platform only runs on Windows, that means I don't get to get in those things very often.
Right. Okay.
But as our cross-platform version comes online, we'll be able to be there. So we took some of that benchmark to make sure that our product is really fast. We took a lot of those benchmarks. We've now put them into our system in my building. We have our own test lab with a bunch of beefy hardware, some 10 gig network cards, switches, and stuff like that. And we're running a similar set of benchmarks. And I thought, if you want to see the results of this, anybody wants to, can go to github.com/ASP.NET/benchmarks. And on this site, we have a list of the hardware that we're running. You can actually find the source code that we're running, and you can see the results of this. And it's pretty interesting. Right now, we have one of the Tech and Power benchmarks running, and it shows this is a API that's getting hit and returning some serialized JSON.
Mm-hmm.
So ASP.NET 4.6, the stuff we just shipped as part of .NET 4.6, it's doing about 65,000 requests a second on our hardware. If I roll down and look at Node, Node will be doing about 96,000 requests a second on that same hardware.
Okay.
And so you can see there's a little gap between ASP.NET 4.6 and Node. Now ASP.NET 5, running on similar hardware, is doing 109,000 requests a second. So we're basically 10% faster than Node.js in this scenario.
Mm-hmm.
Now what's cool is we have some other benchmarks that we're running where we actually run our cross-platform.NET on a library called libuv. This mm-hmm. is the same library that Node.js runs on top
yep.
of. So we have a C# app that all it does is talks directly to libuv, and it can do 300,000 requests a second.
507.
Yeah, you're cool. And so this means that our long-term goal for where we think we can get to is we think we can get to roughly 300,000, which if you look is three times the speed of Node.
Of Node.
That's awesome.
And if you look up a little bit, we actually have some places where we're not running on IIS. We're actually running directly on libuv, and you can see our numbers are up in the 276s and the 264s
yeah.
and stuff like that.
So if it's okay, can I ask a couple questions about that? So I guess, one, what is the root cause for, I mean, are they, is that I don't want to say real. I mean, is actually .NET actually slower when they're running like 4.6 and 4.5? And
so, if you look at 4.6, it was a different era of time. So mm-hmm. when we built that product, we were building products trying to move people that were building desktop apps to web.
Yep.
And so, what that product did is it had lots of features turned on by default.
Yep.
It okay. had lots of things it was doing for you all the time, and so that meant that today, let's say you're writing this application today.
Yeah.
Well, you're still going to pay the price for some of those features that are just built into that
stack. So it's a valid question, right, is what they're asking.
Yeah, it's a valid question. Okay. If you look at, this is also some of the reasons we did in ASP.NET 5 was okay. we're like, okay, we've been doing this for 15 years. Let's go take a look at what we can make faster. So one of the reasons we're okay. faster, like ASP.NET 5 is faster than 4.6, is we allocate 90% less memory every request that comes in.
Wow.
So today, wow. an ASP.NET 4.6 app is allocating 30K per request, and we yep. allocate 5K now. And if you just look at the amount of work that requires for the machine to go throw the memory away after right. every request,
you can do more now.
You could, well, I can do more now.
Right. Okay.
Now, that said, these benchmarks are synthetic.
Okay.
Yeah. Most customers never actually will. I've never found a customer where my platform is their problem.
Yeah.
It's okay, going to be the yeah. database they're talking to. Well, the way they design their tables, their joins, all this kind of stuff. It's going to be. It's going to be their database.
Oh,
it's going to be an yeah, API they're calling.
Oh, absolutely.
They're
yeah,
making
yeah.
too many calls.
Yeah.
But the reality now is because these benchmarking sites are live,
yep.
customers find these things and go, I'm not going to use a technology that's not in the top 15.
Yeah. Right.
And so yeah. even though it's not real, who's, you know, like, for example, one of the frameworks in the top five of this thing is doing 2 million requests a second. How many people are going to be serving JSON at 2 million requests a second? I can tell you, Twitter, Facebook,
right.
maybe Microsoft.
And those aren't single boxes, right? And, I mean, those are scaled out.
Yeah. Yeah.
These are huge, you know, companies doing social networking and stuff like that that are pushing those kinds of loads. That's and right. as Corey said, they've got a farm of equipment doing it
yeah,
as well.
So, yeah, so what you said, this synthetic is kind of a superficial question. It's really not, you really don't have that many people hitting or needing that many requests a second.
Right.
Right.
And then,
right. But it's good to
it's
know.
Much
that.
More, I think the relative performance is important, right?
Yes. True. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But the
yeah.
actual
raw numbers
are impressive.
Yes.
May not actually dictate how fast your app goes.
Exactly. Right. The point we want to make is we are
always the database's
fault.
We are as fast yes. as, you know, faster than Node or most of its competition, right. and we will continue to go and push that envelope to be there.
Okay.
You know, you asked another thing. What another thing that causes the network the performance to be different? The one thing we found as we started analyzing some of the competition
mm-hmm.
was they had written very customized networking layers on top of their core frameworks. So, for example, Java has some awesome results in some of these benchmarks.
Wow.
And the reason they do is because they wrote a custom networking layer on top of the actual Java networking layer, which is just for server loads.
Yeah.
And what it's doing is it's using native buffers. It's reducing the amount of calls to the OS. Because every time you make a call to the OS, there's context switching going on. There's
yeah.
a bunch of heavy lifting going on inside the OS. And so if they can reduce the number of times they do that and send bigger chunks of stuff when they do it, they can optimize that performance. And so we're going to build a very similar layer on top of our stuff as well.
That's good to know.
There'll be a server networking stack that's designed to be optimized for the server workloads. And that's really where most of the performance comes into. We were looking at the Java stuff and our stuff.
Yep.
For the most part, the frameworks are the same. We've all been writing these VMs for a long time. You know, I think we still think ours is better, but, you know, that's they're both very mature products.
Good point.
And Node works great on Linux VMs on Azure.
On Azure.
Yeah, I mean, Node works great in Azure. I mean, that's one of the cool things about the you know, Azure.
It works great on app service as well.
It does. And Java does, too.
Yeah.
Java runs great on compute, and it runs great on app service. Unknown to most people, we have, in the case of Node, we have a version of Node installed in app service, and that's the version of Node that you actually use. In the case of Java, we have a built-in one in app service as well, but we do also allow the capability for the customer to upload their own Java VM as well, and we'll run that VM inside of app service as well.
Okay, that's very good. Awesome. Well, thank you. Okay, we got
way more than his share.
Yes,
just to be clear.
But it was
I was trying to, you know. Do you have any?
Are you feeling left out, Corey?
Well,
you feeling left out?
I do feel left out.
Okay. Would you like to ask a question?
Corey, would you like a cookie?
here's a lollipop, Corey. Here's a lollipop.
You know what? How about this? I do have a question. It comes up pretty regularly. It talks a little bit about the classic versus resource manager-based compute. We've got this sort of split now where sort of we've got the existing sort of the older stack running what's called classic, and then the new stack, the resource manager, it comes with things like tagging and and it's template based and so on and so forth. Very, very cool stuff. Anyway, the question I think we've got is, you know, when should I use one versus the other? I actually will be answering it in a Tuesdays with Corey episode today. So since there's very little time, luckily I have my own show. Given the time in this show
Trump.
To stand on the platform, I am a smart man. I am a smart man.
All right.
I was watching a bunch of clubs from Trump last night. It was awesome. So anyway, I am a smart man, and you guys should be honored for me to be here.
My goodness.
So I'm going to move on then. So, you know, we'll put the, wow. This just got awesome.
Man, oh man.
All right. All right.
High five. See us high five.
Everyone can see a high five. All right.
Please.
Do
you have anything else?
I don't. We got 1 minute left. I'll save my questions for the next time.
We didn't talk open source in general. We talked a lot about Node.
There was some open source, a little bit open source.
Well, all the stuff I talked about was purely open source. Even the benchmarks are open source.
Yep.
You can go to the site and grab it.
And ASP is.
And ASP is open source.
Yep.
Boom.
So but we are open source.
We should spend some time talking about Stretch and Hybrid.
We really should.
This is my what's up.
All right.
What's up?
Okay, yeah. So our next show, we'll talk.
You should drill in on what those features are.
Absolutely.
Stretch is actually super awesome. And
Hybrid in general, yeah. Okay, so we'll spend our next show talking about SQL.
So we're going to watch Corey do yoga?
All SQL.
No, it's got to be SQL. SQL runs on compute.
True.
Again, five.
All right.
What's up, sucker? And SQL's useless without a web front end.
It's a compute world.
You could have the greatest UI, but if there's no data to support it, sorry.
Yeah, I use MySQL mostly. Wow.
I am speechless.
I'm using Mongo.
Yeah.
It runs great on Azure.
Yeah, all right. Peace out, everybody. We will see you in 2 weeks.
Take care.